This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry along with Sam Lau.
Hey.
Sam, we're recording just after the close on Friday, April 9th. We're after the end of March Madness and halfway through the Masters. It feels like life is a little bit more normal these days.
Yeah, at least the weather's a lot better too. So I'm just looking out the window here, a lot of sunshine. I was talking to my mom who's out there in Madison, Wisconsin. A shout out to her. Not that she listens to this, but she was telling me that over there is quite nice too, for which can be pretty volatile over there in the springtime for those in the Midwest. So
yes, I was going to say one thing I did miss though was having some soccer on during the week on the trading desk, and you walking by asking if it was World Cup again.
Always World Cup, it seems like.
Always World Cup. So all right, let's get into the market recap.
All right. So looking around the broad markets, it seems like it was a pretty quiet week, fairly uneventful, but all the major sectors of the financial markets look like they ended the week in a positive position. So looking at the S&P 500, it was up almost 3% week to date. Looks like in terms of the best performer on the bookend and then the worst performer to form the other bookend, technology was up almost 5% at 4.69, and energy was down just over 4% within the 11 sectors of the S&P 500. With regards to some of the thematic reversal trades that we have been talking about in past Monday Morning Minutes here, it looks like we're seeing a little bit of reversal on those, actually, with the large cap outperforming small cap by about 3% this week. And similarly, in growth versus value, growth has outperformed value by almost 3% this week as well. So a little bit of reversal there on the reversal. Moving into fixed income, it looks like the 10-year closed the week at 1.66%. Last Thursday, we had a close at 1.67. So the 10-year treasury yield is down just one basis point for the week. So when we cross over to the Barclays U.S. aggregate, it's up about just over a tenth of a point there on the week, with all, it looks like everything within the Barclays Ag ending up in the green as well. And, you know, looking at some of the indices that we follow for some of the below investment grade portions of the U.S. corporate credit market, those also ended the week positive. So a strong week in equities, a positive week in fixed income. And then closing it out with commodities here, commodities were pretty much flat on the week, up a quarter point. Although when you look within WTI, crude oil is down about 3.5%. Closing under $60 for the week at 59.32. Gold up just under 1% on the front month futures contract, and it's just hovering above the 1700 level for the week. So again, pretty quiet. I guess it's not too unexpected given you know, some of the spring breaks may still be going into effect, but overall positive numbers across the board, Jeff.
Yeah, one thing we didn't point out the last week was that the VIX index did close below 20 for the first time in a while, and that continued again this week at close at 16.7. So that quietness, that lower volatility is being shown and reflected in the VIX index, the volatility index of the stock market.
Yeah, so that's really been coming down since the first week of March or so, just pretty sharply. So, you know, to see it come down under 20 is can be a nice thing, I guess. You know, maybe we'll get a nice quiet summer coming through as well.
Yeah, and that makes it, you know, maybe that's a lot of it could be also on the back of the stimulus checks not being spent on call options.
Yeah, that's a good point. So let's see, that wraps it up for the market. What happened last week in the macroeconomic front?
Well, let's go back to April 2nd, the day after we recorded when we had the non-farm payroll release. So we'll go back, I guess that's 2 weeks or a week ago now today. We didn't get a chance to talk about it, but the non-farm payroll number came out at 916,000 above expectations, well above expectations, as we talked about last week. Expectations were pretty high and kept on rising. With the revisions to the previous months, we got a total non-farm payroll of 1,072,000. So yeah.
Take a victory lap on that one, Jeff. You pretty much nailed it, man. You pretty much nailed it. So give us what we have, about 8 to 9 more months of that, and we'll be back to where we started pre-pandemic, back to the level of non-farm payrolls, at least. So we can,
that's right.
If that happens, we can all claim some victory here.
Yeah, if that happens, well, we won't need to be, someone won't need to be taking a victory lap. Everyone will just be very optimistic and happy about the recovery.
Yeah, I can't wait.
On Monday, we did get ISM services PMI number came out better than expected at 63.7, which Ryan Kimmel, one of our analysts, noted was an all-time high. And so that's why it was notable. And all out of the 18 service sectors, all 18 of them reported growth. So a very bullish signal there from the ISM services side of things. On Wednesday, we did get the Fed Open Market Committee minutes. It was as expected. The market really didn't move on it. The Fed kind of reaffirmed that they still see, quote unquote, some time before they start tapering their quantitative easing. There is optimism in the Fed about stimulus and vaccinations, but they still think that there's some questions about the growth outlook, and that they want to view financial conditions, or they want to keep financial conditions accommodative. So to us, that or to me at least, that reads more of Fed on hold for longer. They're trying to confirm their outlook that there's not going to be any Fed rate hikes till 2023. And then on Thursday, yesterday, the total persons claiming unemployment insurance number came out unchanged again at 18 million or so. We seem to have lost that noisiness that we had earlier in the year where we were jumping between 18 and 20 million, but keeping up at that 18 million number. So still an elevated number, but hopefully that number won't be increasing from here. And then earlier today, we had the producer price index, the PPI, came out. This is the first good look we've had at the base effects that we talked about a few weeks ago. The number came out above expectations, both month over month and year over year. But we expect that going forward, we'll kind of break that number and continue getting to new year over year highs. Specifically, next month we expect it to get to a new year over year high, and who knows what'll happen after that. So as we said, a pretty quiet week in the macro land, even though it was a full week of day, a full week.
Yeah, and we're talking about some of those base effects. We're really getting into that point where it's going to be a make it or break it time for those hardcore inflationistas who keep looking for it. We'll see. I mean, I guess Jim Bianco has always said it best. I think he said this about a year ago. It's about time for the inflationists to put up or shut up, and we're getting close to that mark here. So let's take a look to see what the next few months of data have to show us.
Right. And if you're putting the stimulus checks directly into people's hands and you don't get inflation, then might as well just keep doing it.
Yeah. And that's that's the thing, right? We'll talk about a little bit more about that later, I think, as we cover some of our questions of the week as well. But yes. We'll run that. But hey, Jeff, good news. We have a cornucopia of questions this week to select from. So it seems like our our appeal has paid off. So thanks everyone, and keep those questions coming in. But we had a number of those, and we plan to address the questions over the next few weeks in the order received. Wanted to drop a hey, the 90s random consultant. Thanks for your message there and question. And we'll try to draw from your, it was an email and a tweet, it seems like. It's sometime for the, we'll look to draw from it for the question of the week in the next few weeks. And just as a heads up, while we can't provide feedback on any individual names or stocks or tickers, what we can do is provide our thoughts on just the, you know, the oil complex as a whole, and hopefully you'll find that helpful. And then secondly, to Bobby, we got your questions as well, of which there are several. So for now, we'll ask you to hang tight, and we'll share some of our thoughts in an upcoming episode as well. But going in the order received, today's question of the week comes from John, you know, who's been taking advantage of the pandemic and just really using it as an opportunity to read. So he asked for a recommendation on books that we that could hopefully improve his financial and investing literacy. So Jeff and I, you know, discussed it and selected a number of books to hopefully get you started. What we also did is we selected a book recommendation each from the others on our team. So we'll be referencing those as well. So thanks for the question, John. Hopefully we can emerge from this pandemic soon, and it could be considered summer reading instead of pandemic reading. Right. So Jeff, can you kick us off with this list?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of them, because a lot of them are books that you've probably heard of. So we wanted to make sure to spread a wide breadth, so that hopefully John gets some books he hasn't heard of, and some good recommendations there. But from a big picture, not necessarily macro, but big macro picture idea, the first book on our list is The Signal and the Noise: Why So Many Predictions Fail But Some Don't, by Nate Silver. You may know him as the political political predictor who notoriously didn't think Trump had a chance in 2016, but you know, the subtext of his book is how people make predictions and how most people don't understand probability and why so many predictions fail. So, when I think the kind of baseline is when he says 80% probability of X happening, there's always that 20% chance that it doesn't happen. And, you know, we only get to live this life once. We're not in the Marvel multiverse where you get to have the branch of probabilities and, you know, live in that 80% chance. You have to get whatever chance we go through. Second on the list is a book called Nudge: Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness, by Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein. This is one of my selections. It was a book about how people make choices, people's biases, and how to use those biases, or how to kind of turn those biases around to help people make better decisions. And then one of our analysts, Mark Kimbrough, who helps us with the economic data that we do talk about every week, the book that he recommended is called The Visual Display of Quantitative Information, by Edward Tufte. It's a book on statistical charts, graphs, and tables, and how to display information clearly, and something that hopefully when people do see our webcast and our chart books, that we are using these using this information and trying to display that information on a clear basis. And then it's something that's
usually overlooked as well, right? I know when we hire an analyst, and especially those on our team, you know, a lot of them tend to just overlook the presentation, you know, the way to display the information. And, you know, we, meaning me, you, and Sherman tried to stress the importance of being able to make the information that we try to display just very clear and just understandable. It's just so people don't get confused and misrepresent the data as well.
Right. And how many times do you hear, this is a busy chart, but it's like, well, then maybe think of a different way to display that information, because a busy chart means people are just going to, you know, gloss over it and not really pay attention to the underlying thesis behind the chart.
Right.
On the back of that, another book that I personally like is called How to Lie with Statistics, by Daryl Huff and Irving Geis. I put in here, the description is, the title says it all. not necessarily, I wasn't reading this book as a way to how to figure out how to lie with statistics, but so that I would be aware of the methods that some people could use to lie with statistics. And so you're aware of them and, you know, kind of question charts and statistics that you do see out there.
It's kind of one, like the saying, it takes a thief to recognize a thief, yeah. Right? You know, and that's also right. Like when we get our AML training, the anti-laundering training, it just gives you a lot of information. You just got to use it appropriately.
Also, in the big picture section, there's a kind of a newer book that's been catching on, the idea that's been certainly been catching on in Congress is The Deficit Myth, Modern Monetary Theory and the Birth of the People's Economy by Stephanie Kelton. I thought this book was interesting. I don't necessarily agree with all of the ideas in it, but, you know, I thought it was a good background and a good, good way to see how people are thinking about MMT. And, you know, we're certainly, if we do not get this inflation from all the stimulus, then we are living in the MMT world.
Yeah, and another point within there, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but I think Stephanie Kelton would say that if we're not getting inflation, then we should actually just reduce or eliminate taxes, and because that's part of the way, if I recall correctly, that she discusses the balance between deficit spending and stimulus and taxes being the way to curb inflation if it starts to rear its ugly head. And then if there is no inflation, then you can just rely on the deficit spending instead for the revenue side of the equation.
That's right. But I think, you know, in order for it to really work, we need some sort of automatic stabilizers, because it doesn't seem like, at least in my mind, you couldn't really get Congress to act in a time appropriate manner when inflation does pick up. How long would it take them to pass some sort of tax increase, and how would that tax increase work?
Yeah,
so you need some sort of automated side of things. So I don't know if we're there yet, but certainly we're moving in that direction.
No, that's a good point.
And then last in our big picture section is The Black Swan, the Impact of the Highly Improbable by Nassim Taleb. Most people have probably heard of this book. To me, it's a little bit overrated. It's an overused term in terms of a black swan. I think our CCO actually used that term yesterday. So maybe that is a signpost that it is an overused term. But a lot of, you know, what it reminds me of is, you know, when you see these Wall Street reports where they're like, this is a 6 standard deviation event or an 8 standard deviation event. It's like, I guess the idea behind the black swan is much more of a, you know, there are risks out there that you don't know about. And so don't base everything on what you know. You always take into account the fact that the big risk is what you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other cohort of books, as we continue down our list, we categorize as investing and the system. You know, so what goes into and can impact the actual investments here. So the first one on the list is The Complete Turtle Trader. This is something that Jeff Sherman had recommended to me fairly early on. He's generous enough to give me a copy of his book, which I did return, I should say. The Complete Turtle Trader is a book written by Michael Covell. It's you can think of it as a real life experiment, a voluntary experiment with voluntary participants around the idea of perhaps nurture versus nature, and the idea that successful trading is a skill that can be learned via simple objective rules. Anyone can do it. I kind of like it too. I've heard it compared to the idea of the movie Trading Places with Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd, amongst others, and Jamie Lee Curtis in there as well. So just the idea that anyone can learn to be a successful investor via just objective rules there. So I found that quite entertaining and informative and easy read. Next up on there is Reminiscences. I just killed that word.
Yeah.
But Reminiscences of a Stock Operator, written by Edwin Lefevre, L-E-F-E-V-R-E. This is a book that I caught on to just based on listening. I think Jeffrey's mentioned it a few times, Jeffrey Gundlach. So whenever he mentions a book in the discussion, I tend to go look it up and read it. So this one's up to be reread by me. I want to go back and take a look at it again. But it's the story of Jesse Livermore. Look him up, see if you have any interest. It's a pretty interesting character. It's a bit dated. I believe it was published back in 1923. So it's coming up on its centennial here, but the concepts are really still relevant today. And at its core, it's, you know, revolves around the idea of human behavior. So behavioral investing, and then also just market technicals. And it was entertaining. It was entertaining enough, also an easy read.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it just goes to show you that in 100 years, people haven't changed. And so much of the market is based on people's behavior.
Yeah, we are, regardless of all the advances at our core, we're all basic creatures here, just driven by the same basic functions, I suppose. So the next one was recommended by another one of our analysts, Eric Dahl. And I got a kick out of the title because this just matches his personality perfectly. So I'm not surprised that he recommended it, but it's called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds by Charles McKay. The description that he provided is that it's a history of popular folly. Learn why intelligent people do amazingly stupid things when caught up in speculative mania. That's from, well, actually, that's not his description. It's from the Dust Jacket. I should have read this beforehand. But in a similar vein, you know, another book that we, you know, probably could recommend is by Professor Robert Shiller, Irrational Exuberance. That brings, you know, Dahl's choice there brings that to mind. So that's another one to check out there. And then finally, within this segment, we have three more. So I guess I shouldn't call it finally, but the next one is Secrets of the Temple by William Greider, Greider. It's based on interviews, but what it does is it provides an insider look into the Federal Reserve System and how it runs the show. I got to give kudos and a shout out to Lauren Fleckenstein, who's listening in on this podcast today, right now, real time. But I'm giving him a shout out because he's the one that gave me this book. And I say gave because I'd never gave it back. And I remember him saying that he wasn't lending it to me. He was giving it to me. So thank you, Lauren, for that. I'll describe this as a dozer. It's a lot to muddle through, but it is very informative if you want to try to figure out the inner workings of the Federal Reserve and the impact that it has on not only the you know, the financial markets, but also not just the U.S. economy, but global economies.
So was he giving it to you because he doesn't want to reread it because it was such a dozer?
It could be. He gave it to me, I think, even as I was an intern back in
day. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, 2006 or so, I want to say. But yeah, he was kind enough to give it to me. And I see you have a book there in the similar type of concept here, also around the central bank world and monetary policies. It's called Lords of Finance, The Bankers Who Broke the World by Liaquat Ahmed. The last name is spelled A-H-A-M-E-D. And it's about four central bankers within the U.S., Britain, Germany, and France, and how they brought about the Great Depression. So it's a good example of how central bankers don't know it all, but act like they do. I think the same could be said about a lot of people.
It's very worried, as you know, when you read that and you kind of go through what the central bankers, how they act today, it's a little bit worrisome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they convey the confidence, but do they really know what they're doing? So especially in this new, you know, pretty new experiment called quantitative easing here within the U.S. So. And then the next and final book within this cohort is recommended by our very own Jeff Sherman, Active Portfolio Management, A Quantitative Approach for Producing Superior Returns and Controlling Risk. It's by Richard Grenold and Ronald Kahn. And I like your description here because I haven't read it, but your description just says it looks complicated.
So yeah, and then I pulled it up, and like one of the first phrases in the description says mathematically rigorous and meticulously organized. So
yeah, I think I just fell asleep already. Yeah, so yeah.
We'll leave Jeff Sherman to describe it to us, and he can give us the Cliff Notes version.
That's right.
Want to move on to the next section?
Yeah, why don't you bring us there?
All right, the next section is the more entertaining and lifestyle or period snapshots of the finance world. And no surprise here, but the first one on our list is Liar's Poker by Michael Lewis. And then those most people probably know of The Big Short movie, but Michael Lewis also wrote the book there. Happy to note that I did read the book, but have never seen the movie and likely won't see the movie. Kind of third on our list is a book, Monkey Business by John Rolfe and Peter Troob. And then finally, again, people have probably seen the movie, The Wolf of Wall Street, but there's also a book by Jordan Belfort. A very entertaining read of kind of the thing, the goings on back in the day. And I'm sure that these types of activities don't occur these days, or at least not to that extent.
Yeah. And I think all four of these books really do capture kind of that feel of the time and what the time period in which they took place. Liar's Poker, I believe, was in the 80s as a, you know, as a bond salesman. And then the Big Short was in, you know, much more recent. I kind of cringed with each page turn there, just having lived through it, as I'm sure you probably did. Monkey Business in the 90s for DLJ, if I remember correctly, an investment bank that was merged or bought up by one of the bigger iBanks. But and Wolf of Wall Street, I didn't read the book, watch the movie, but there's just great period pieces and just give you an idea of hopefully an era that's a bygone era, let's say.
Yes, yes. And then we get to the last section, or the second to last section, books that we have either purchased have yet to read, or books that certainly we want to reread. So why don't you kick us off there, Sam?
Yeah. So the first one was one that I've purchased and have yet to read, but I'm looking forward to it. It's called Keeping At It, The Quest for Sound Money and Good Government. It's by Paul Volcker here, the central bank and pretty much the individual that is responsible for killing inflation and the opposite end of the spectrum of where we're at today, where Powell's trying to bring inflation back to life. Volcker was there to squash it. So he had a pretty solid track record in doing that, as it held, you know, through several decades. I shouldn't say killed inflation, but he definitely brought us into a period of disinflation over the past 3 decades now, let's call it. And then there's The Great Crash of 1929. That's another Jeffrey Gundlach reference that I bought once I heard it and have yet to read, but that's by John Galbraith. We also have The Fourth Turning, What Cycles of History Tell Us About America's Next Rendezvous with History. And this is by William Strauss and Neil Howe. Those of you who catch the periodic webcast that Jeffrey hosts for some of our products here have likely heard Jeffrey mention this in the past, but it really deals with the cyclical shifts in societal generations that are typically marked by 20-year windows. So we are currently in the fourth period, the fourth turning, and of the four periods, they are described as high, awakening, unraveling, and crisis. So the U.S. purportedly entered into crisis in 2005, which means that somewhere around this decade is when we should be emerging that. And that transition is usually, or that period is usually marked by some turmoil, as you can pretty much gather from the name of that current cycle. The funny thing is, you and I, Jeff, we were talking about this, you know, we both, you know, picked it up because of Jeffrey, but I gotta say, I mean, Dozer doesn't even begin to describe how I felt when I was just trying to read the first 20. I don't even think I've got past the first 20 or 25 pages yet, but
I definitely got further than you, but have not finished it. But you know, I started talking about this book with my wife, and she read it, or she read it in the Don Ron reading a book way of listening to it in the car on an audio book. But to me, I'd be scared of falling asleep even while driving. So I have yet to use her audiobook file of that. But you know, certainly something that's on the to-do list.
Yeah, hopefully she wasn't driving. So then the last one on this purchase but yet to read or reread is Against the Gods, The Remarkable Story of Risk by Peter Bernstein. And this is a book that Jeff Sherman also recommended here as well. It was one of his tops. And I think it actually was his recommendation here, but
I read it. I went through my list of books, and Amazon says I bought this book in 2005. So if I can find it somewhere, you know, this could be in a storage or in the attic or something. It's due for a reread from me, but it was definitely a good book and one of the ones that came to mind for me. Also talks about history of probability and risk, you know, Bayes' theorem, and if that kind of if that Bayes' theorem is something that people don't know, the book does explain it in a fairly user friendly way.
Yeah, that's a book that I'm going to be purchasing and attempting to read, let's say. I'll be honest with myself. I'm going to attempt to read it just based on both of your guys' recommendation here.
And then finally, for those of you that, for me anyway, the past year or so, I've been trying to step away from finance in my downtime. So we have a category of books called, books to read to take your mind off of things. I'll start off with a couple that... I reread Dune by Frank Herbert in anticipation of the upcoming Dune movie. I read this one again. I also attempted to read Starship Troopers by Robert Heinlein. Some people might have seen the movie. The book is different and better, and I'd like to give Fifi Wong a shout out for lending me her copy, but it's at the office, so I have not been able to read that yet. But maybe when I go to the office, next time I'll remember to pick that up out of our office, Sam. And then finally, I've been reading a book called The New IPA, Scientific Guide to Hop Aroma and Flavor by Scott Janisch, which again is probably in the lines of the active portfolio management book, where it's super complicated and sciencey and math. But I'm working my way through that book now.
Have you implemented any of it into your own little home brewery there?
Not yet. But I definitely plan to.
All right. And going down the continuing the history of us defining acronyms, I'm going to say and contribute here. IPA stands for India Pale Ale, folks. Type of beer. So for my books, I read a lot of financial materials at work. So when it's time to take your mind off things, I go to the classics. For me, I've taken a break from the American classical literature, and I've gone overseas here. So one of them that I've been working through is Crime and Punishment by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Interesting history of the author. And his experience with life and eventually death, but then also just threat of death, let's say. And then I'm also reading The Plague, and I'm going to test out my French as I usually do in these podcasts for some reason. But I thought that The Plague would be appropriate for the pandemic reading, and that was written by Albert Camus, if that works. Otherwise, I'll just say it the old American way. Albert Camus was the author of that. So.
Two very well known authors there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm probably brutalizing the name either way of the author of The Plague there. So,
should we get to the things to keep an eye on for next week?
Yeah. So what we wanted to do was just really concentrate on some of the things that might move the markets and impact how things trade next week. So it looks like on Tuesday we've got the CPI coming out as well as hourly earnings. Looks like CPI for this print, for the March print, was looking to breach 2.5%. Expected to be 2.5%, breaching that 2% barrier for the first time in a while. And I think if I recall correctly from our weekly meetings where we have our own forecasts on CPI, that this could be the last print in the 2 handle. And then everything after that is going to be 3% at least through late summer.
That's right. And then, do we get a 4? That's going to be the question.
Yeah. So we'll see if, that translates over to core PCE as well. And see how the Fed continues to hold the line from there. And then moving on to Thursday, we have retail sales, and we're expecting a big reversal from last week as the stimulus or stimmy checks are back, and weather this time should not be a factor. So we'll see what kind of rebound we get in the Thursday number. And then finally, next week is the start to first quarter earnings season. They really begin in earnest with the big banks reporting on Wednesday or Thursday next week. So these are some of the things that we're keeping our eye on that could be causing some shifts in the market. So
Sam, you forgot one though. That's Jay Powell going on 60 Minutes on Sunday. I just saw it today, and you know, I think that maybe that might be even the bigger market moving event. Just you know, what he says and or how he says it, and what he you know, kind of what his idea is on, you know, the base effects, whether this inflation is transitory. I'm sure that he will say, you know, it is just base effects and it is transitory, and try to just beat it into people that, listen, don't, when you see a three plus inflation print, don't worry.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of ways to get off script within that 60 minute time frame too. So stay tuned on that one.
Unfortunately, there won't be we'll have to watch the futures market to see how stocks are reacting to everything that's being out there. But you know, it's, I think 60 Minutes is one of those shows where it's released, is, you know, it's delayed here on the West Coast. So we may have to, we'll have to see how the market reacts on the East Coast already.
All right. Well, it was a good discussion today. I just wanted to thank everyone for listening out there. Monday Morning Minutes. If you like what you heard, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. You can always pick up the latest episode each Monday right before the bell. Monday Morning Minutes were available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. So you can always feel free to hit us up on Twitter with any comments or suggestions, or, you know, please send us your questions. And our Twitter handle is DLine Minutes. And we can also do this via email at minutes@doubleline.com.
I'd like to thank our listeners for sending in those questions. And as Sam said, rest assured, we will get to your questions in future episodes. You can find more information about DoubleLine at our website, doubleline.com. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/DoubleLineCapital. Where you can find the latest episode of The Sherman Show with Louis Gav, with having a wide-ranging discussion on global markets. For those of you that like to watch The Sherman Show, check out Sam and Jeff's matching shirts. you can subscribe to that podcast or follow it on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Talk to everyone again next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast and any liability therefor, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk.
Copyright 2021 DoubleLine Capital.